Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, one of the show's producers, sitting in for John Schaefer. Today, the opera world is mourning its most beloved star, Luciano Pavarotti, known as the King of the High Seas, for his astounding voice. The world-famous performer died early this morning at the age of 71, and we'll have remembrances today from our own John Schaefer, who's home nursing a bum knee, and from Pavarotti's old friend and fellow foodie, Fred Plotkin. But we begin with Anne Majette, the classical music writer and co-author of the book about Pavarotti, The King and I. She joins us by phone. Anne, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
And we began just now with a very rare recording of the opening night performance of his professional debut at age 25, and we also heard one of his famous High Seas. What's opera losing today?
Well, probably its most beloved and most visible exponent of the last three or four decades. I think that while there are several singers of Pavarotti's generation who achieved some heights, there's no question that Pavarotti was the most famous and visible singer of our memory.
So he's not just a voice, he's also an ambassador.
He was very much an ambassador, although I would question whether the people who loved him for the three tenors and the arena concerts, which became most of his performances later in his career, whether those people really came to opera, but they certainly came to love Pavarotti. And for those of us who truly love opera, I think what one has lost is the memory of those early performances in the 1970s and even in the 60s when he was truly at the peak of his voice and had the excitement about staged opera still that later on was not quite so present in some of his later performances.
So, you know, he's known for his powerful voice and technical excellence. You also mentioned the three tenors, which brought him even more popularity. Why did he appeal to both purists and to populists?
Well, opera was originally a populist art, and Pavarotti was very much in the Italian opera tradition. I don't think he cared about opera as a high art. I think he cared about making a beautiful sound, and I think he cared about communicating with people. And I think people of all walks of life really responded to the voice and the intensity of what he wanted or how he wanted to reach them with it. It's a way that opera used to be appreciated in the 19th century when people sang on the streets after they left the opera house. And today when we tend to think of opera as high art, one forgets that it has a very lowbrow element. And it's not to say that Pavarotti was lowbrow, but I don't think he cared so much about that kind of definition.
So, I mean, even, you know, despite the historical perspective that you're giving us here, he got a lot of flack for selling out. But, you know, earlier artists like Caruso also did crossover stuff in large-scale concerts. How did Pavarotti survive that kind of grief that he got?
Well, I think it shows that the classical music establishment has changed considerably over the years, and I don't think Pavarotti really cared that he got grief for it. He was making a lot of money, and he had a huge fan base, and he was doing what he wanted to do, which is, as I said, reaching the audience. He kind of fed off the love of the audience, and any smart musician worth his salt, and I say this as a critic, will not listen too much to what the critics say, because our perspective is perhaps different than the artist's perspective.
We're talking to the classical music writer Anne Majette about Luciano Pavarotti, who died this morning at the age of 71. Pavarotti was known for his offstage personal appetites, many different kinds of appetites. He loved food. There were some romantic scandals. How did that affect his public persona?
Well, I think that's part and parcel of any self-respecting opera singer's persona. Once again, Pavarotti was continuing a tradition. There's a reason for the saying, the fat lady sings. In Pavarotti's case, it was the fat man, but he kept that going. And I think you could say that certainly in our book, Herbert Breslin, who was Pavarotti's manager for 36 years and who was the co-author of The King and I, which was about his relationship with Pavarotti, together with me, said that Pavarotti's love of food was a kind of addiction, the same way that his love of the public was an addiction, and perhaps his love of women was too, although I don't think he was quite as extreme in his actual pursuit of his love of women as he was in his pursuit of food, which was an all-consuming no pun intended.
Well, we're going to talk to Fred Plotkin in a moment, and I'm sure Fred has some things to say about his love of food as a fellow foodie. But, you know, you're a regular guest on Soundcheck, and you've told us before that Pavarotti's main artistic legacy was his early work. What's your favorite?
My favorite Pavarotti recording is Cielo e Mar from Ponchielli's La Gioconda, the recording he made of it early on in his career in the 1970s or so on his solo recital album. I think that captures the beauty of the voice and the distinctive timbre that it had, as well as anything he made.
Well, we'll leave it there with you, Anne. I know you've been doing interviews since 2 a.m. this morning for news outlets all around the country. Thanks so much for making time for Soundcheck.
Thank you for having me.
Here is a selection from La Gioconda. This is Cielo e Mar.
Ardente sfira, oggi l'evento dell'amore. A quel cuore che
This is Soundcheck. I'm Joel Meyer, one of the show's producers, sitting in for John Schaefer. In a little while, we'll speak with John Schaefer about his memories of Luciano Pavarotti, but right now, we'll continue our remembrance of Pavarotti with our friend, music writer Fred Plotkin. He's the author of the book Opera 101, and he joins us by phone from a boat that's about 30 miles off the coast of Santorini, a trip to the Greek islands. Fred, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you. I'm actually just 30 feet off Santorini.
Oh, okay. You haven't.
I'm looking at it.
You haven't wandered that far. Well,
no.
You knew Pavarotti in a very personal way. You apparently even cooked together.
I knew him for a very long time. We met in 1978 or 77, perhaps, when I worked at La Scala, and I was an assistant stage director, and he came there to sing, and we immediately hit it off on the subject of food. And the reason, obviously, he loved his food and I loved mine, was that I had learned Italian cookery in Modena, in Bologna, which is only about 18 miles from his hometown of Modena, so that the food I knew was the food he knew. And almost immediately we started eating together in Milan and lamenting that it was not as good as the food of Modena or Bologna. And 4 or 5 years later, when I went to work as the performance manager of the Metropolitan Opera, he lived in New York at the Hampshire House on Central Park South. And I used to go over there, and we used to make Modenese and Bolognese dishes together. And my strongest memory of Luciano, apart, obviously, from the glorious music, was the smell of brodo, or this beautiful capon broth that one always had in his kitchen. Because capon broth was what he used to lubricate his throat, and it's also what he would use to cook his pasta in, as anybody in Modena would do.
I hear that he even contributed a recipe for spaghetti alla carbonara to your first book, The Authentic Pasta Book.
As a matter of fact, it's really in large part because of Luciano that I became an author, because we used to cook together, and he said, you know, your food really tastes like my mother's. And he said, I don't know anybody in America who cooks Italian food that's so authentic. And he said, you should write a book. And I said, I don't know anything about writing books. I work in opera. And he said, well, I'm going to see to it that you write a book. And his publisher at the time was Simon & Schuster. And about 2 weeks later, I had a call from Simon & Schuster asking me to propose a book. Now, he, to his last day, the last time I saw him, denied that he ever offered money, let's say, for the book contract, but I'm certain he did. So it's sad, but I'm going to celebrate him tonight with a big meal. I think that is the best honor that I could give Luciano Pavarotti, who is being lauded for his music. But he was a remarkably generous man, and not everybody knows that about him, but he always lent a hand to help people without expecting anything back. In my case, it was to become an author. But there were many people who might have been sick, and he reached out, and he never asked for publicity.
We're talking with Fred Plotkin, music writer and author of the book Opera 101. He's sharing his memories of Luciano Pavarotti. Fred, you remember him for his food and for his generosity. Is there a particular musical moment you'll remember?
Well, in effect, it was he who really helped get me really turned on to opera. And to give an example, when I left full-time employment at the Met, I thought, well, what performance would be the best to leave on? And I selected La Boheme on February 6, 1988. That was the last performance starring Mirella Freni and Luciano Pavarotti and a young Thomas Hampson being conducted by Carlos Kleiber. And when I left, I signed my report for the Met for the last time, Addio senza rancore, which is exactly what Mirella Freni sang to Luciano Pavarotti.
We've been speaking with Fred Plotkin. He's been sharing his memories of Luciano Pavarotti. He's speaking to us by phone from a boat just 30 feet off the Greek island of Santorini. Fred, we're going to leave you with a selection of Pavarotti performing La Boheme. And Fred, thanks very much for being on Soundcheck today.
Thank you, and best wishes to everyone in New York.
Entrare con voi pur ora ed i miei sogni usati e i miei sogni.
It's still Soundcheck. Stay tuned. In a little while, we'll speak with women jazz drummers about keeping time in a male-dominated music business. And later, a live performance by the Shanghai String Quartet. I'm Joel Meyer, a show producer sitting in today for John Schaefer, and I'm joined right now by John Schaefer. We often wish, John, that we could have you on as a guest on the show, and we're so glad you didn't bail on your own show last minute.
Well, you know, I guess sitting here with a bum knee, there's no place I could go, so here I am.
Well, we just talked to Fred Plotkin, and like Fred, John, Pavarotti got you into opera. How so?
Well, you know, I was a teenager in college, knew nothing about opera, was just beginning to give myself a little crash course in classical music, and it was those recordings, and both Anne and Fred have mentioned the great Pavarotti recordings on the London Decca label in the 1970s, and it was hearing that voice, it was a revelation. I mean, it had this clarion, bell-like quality to it. And I wasn't sure what operas these arias were from. All I knew was that voice pinned my ears to the wall in the same way that a Robert Fripp guitar solo, you know, with the band King Crimson would have done a few years earlier. It really grabbed your attention.
Okay. Now, John, if I know your music tastes, what would be typical of you is that you would not like the popular stuff. You would like the little-known stuff that's hard to find and you might have to find on eBay or something like that, or his art songs, I guess, is what I'm talking about. Why did you like these more powerful works than his powerful High Cs?
You know, the High Cs always seemed to me kind of like a freak show. People talk about the 9 High Cs in a row in the Donizetti opera, La Fille du Regiment. You know, that to me that's like watching A-Rod hit 2 home runs in 1 inning last night for the Yankees. You know what really is important was the emotional heft that you heard in some of the lesser known songs. I never heard of this composer Tosti, for example, but Pavarotti recorded a number of his art songs and they were just absolutely spellbinding. And even someone you take like Bellini, who's most famous for the opera Norma, you know, Pavarotti actually recorded some art songs that I think lots of opera fans wouldn't even be aware of, were it not for the fact that Pavarotti recorded them.
Well, we have just such an example. Here's a recording of Pavarotti in an intimate recital recording performing Vincenzo Bellini's Vane o Rosa Fortunata.
Vane o Rosa Fortunata posare di nice in petto ed ognuna sarà
costretto la tua sorte ad invidia. Ah, se in te potessi anch'io trasformarmi un sol momento, non avria più bel contento questo cuore a sospira. Ma tu inchini dispettosa, bella rosa impallidita, la tua fronte scolorita dallo sdegno e dal dolor. Bella rosa è destinata ad entrambi un'ugual sorte, la trovar dobbiam la morte, tu d'invidia e Dio d'amore. Bella rosa, bella.
We're talking with John Schaefer, host of this show, WNYC Soundcheck, and also New Sounds, and we're talking about Luciano Pavarotti, who died this morning at the age of 71. John, we're going to go out with the Nessun Dorma, one of his best-known pieces. It became the official theme song of the 1990 World Cup. Why did this convince you that this is one of the greatest voices ever?
Well, you know, I should say the reason I'm home with a bad knee is it is a soccer injury. And hearing Nessun Dorma at the 1990 World Cup, where it became, as you say, kind of the unofficial anthem of that year's World Cup, it was certainly not the first time I had heard that recording. It was one of the first ones that really struck me back in the late 70s when I was in school. I had the same kind of rock snob feeling that you get when, you know, you've been a fan of a band and then suddenly they make it big and you're like, now they've sold out. I had the same kind of reaction hearing Nessun Dorma like 12 years later being blared out of stadium speakers all across the world. But you know what? You can't help listening to this voice in this aria, which really became for many his signature tune, and just not fall under its spell.
Oh, well, John, let's hear it. I've been speaking with John Schaefer, who normally hosts this show. He'll be back tomorrow. Thanks very much, John.
Thanks, Joel.
Later tonight, WNYC's Evening Music will run a special program honoring Luciano Pavarotti. That's tonight at 7 on 93.9 WNYC. Up next on Soundcheck, Equality Behind the Drum Kit, how women jazz drummers are shaking up a historically male-dominated profession. And later, the Shanghai String Quartet gives a live performance in our studio. Stay tuned. This is Soundcheck.